You on welfare reform. Mm. Is Danny Alexander right when he claims that the Lib Dems had to fight tooth and nail to get the Tories to agree to raise the income tax threshold?
Well, to be fair, that's not my recollection of what actually happened. I understand that these were discussions and debates that took place in the coalition. I mean, after all, the Conservatives are in favour and came into this election, last election, in favour of reducing the overall burden of taxation. So the question really was, how best did we do it? So the discussion took place. They were very keen for it to be done at raising the thresholds. There were other debates about whether you actually raise the lower rate of income tax. So there's a balance of where you do it, but it was clear from the Conservatives that we always wanted to improve the quality of life for those at the bottom end, so raising the thresholds fit within the overall plan. So there, if it was a row, it was the kind of row you have over a cup of tea around a breakfast table, row, if you know what I mean, and then you all agree and pat each other on the back and move on. But maybe that's a big row for the Liberal Democrats, I'm not sure.
All right. Now, you're enacting the biggest reform of the welfare state in a generation. We've got a lot to cover.
Yeah.
There are two main criticisms of what you're doing. One, will they work? And secondly, are the changes fair? Let's start with the first, with will they work?
Indeed.
Leslie Roberts, one of our viewers, contacted us on Facebook. She wants to know why so much has already been written off due to failures of the universal credit system, even though it's barely been introduced. Why have we had to spend all this money?
Well, actually, there hasn't been. I mean, relatively to, it's an over £2 billion investment project. In the private sector, IT programs write off regularly 30, 40% because that's the nature. Now, the point I want to make here is that universal credit's already rolling out. The IT is working. We're improving it as we go along. And the reality with all programs to do with IT, the key thing is you keep your eye on the bits that don't work and you make sure they don't actually create a problem for the program.
But and you've so that's exactly off 140 million.
No, no, we haven't. The write-off
public
is,
accounts committee.
No. The write-off is
140 million being wasted.
No, there's two things. The 40 million that was written off was to do with security IT that I actually took the decision over a year and a half ago, and so the program continued to roll out. What your what those figures include is what is the standard write down, which is the amortization of cost over a period of time, which you do. For example, the existing legacy system computers, they were written down in cost terms in the accounts years ago, but they continue to work right now to produce benefit changes. So it's a reality that universal credit is rolling out. We're doing the pathfinders. We're learning a lot about it. But I'm not going to ever do this again like the last government did, which is you do big bang launches and then you have problems like they have with the health IT and it crashes. You do it phase by phase. You learn what you have to do. You make the changes.
Right.
And then you continue to get the rest of it right.
But even your Conservative cabinet colleague, Frances Maude, says the implementation of universal credit has been, quote, pretty lamentable.
He was referring back to the time when Mai actually stopped that particular element of the process.
Was under
and I
your
agreed
watch.
With him. But I agreed with him under that. And I actually was the one that intervened to make the changes. But the key point here is, and this is very important, Andrew, it is rolling out. I invite anybody from the media, etc., to come and look at where it's being rolled out.
Well, you
to.
Say it's been rolling
it's
out.
Remarkable.
But almost nobody can notice the rolling out. I mean, you were predicting that a million people would be on universal credit. This is the new welfare credit, which rolls up six existing welfare benefits.
That's right, yep.
And you were predicting a million people would be on it by April. Well, it's March, and only 3,200 are on it.
No, well, I'm not going to bandy figures around. It's over 6,000 rising. The point is
6,000 then. I'll give you 6,000.
But it's in the Pathfinder. The point is, I changed the way we would roll it out over a year and a half ago, and there was a reason for that. Under the advice of somebody I brought in from outside, he said, you're better pathfinding this out, making sure you learn the lessons, roll it out slower, and then you gain momentum later on. Actually, on the timetables for the rollout, we're very clear that pretty much it's going to roll out within the timescales originally set, but the scale of that rolls out. So what we're going to do is roll it out into the North West, so that we replicate the UK and the Northwest, recognise how it works properly, and then you roll it out region by region,
you
which is a much better way to do
you
it.
You won't hit a million by April, let's be honest.
No. I've no intention of trying to pretend that we will. But that's quite deliberate. Andrew, I will not because it would be the wrong thing to do. I recognised that 2 years ago. We want to roll it out carefully so that we make sure that everything about it works. There are lots of variations and variables in this process, but if you do it that way, you won't end up with the kind of debacle that last government had on the health service and many others, where they wrote off something in the order of £28 billion of IT programmes.
Right.
We won't be doing that. Well, process will get it so that it's delivered, and the important point is there's £38 billion of net benefits, which is is exactly what the NAO said, so it's worth getting it right.
William Grant tweeted us. He goes by the name of @MorrieGolfer. He wants to know, when will the universal credit actually be universal? When will it cover the whole country?
By 2016, everybody who is claiming a benefit in those six benefits will actually be claiming a universal credit benefit.
But not everybody will be getting it by then.
Well, because there are those who are already on, in one particular case, say, for some of those on sickness benefits, where they'll take longer to bring on because it's a little more problematic with them. It's a bit more difficult because many of them have no work expectations on them. But for those who are actually on things like present tax, working tax credits, on things like job seekers allowance and all the benefits, they will be making claims on universal credit. Many of them are already doing that now. There are over 200,000 people around the country who are already on parts of universal credit now, and there'll be more.
You can't give me a date as when everybody will be on UC.
Oh, we said that they'd be on UC by the 2018. But the reality is...
And are you on track for that?
Yes, we are. But my reality is...
8 years it's taken.
2016 is when everybody claiming this benefit will be on. Then you have to bring those who've been on a long time on other benefits.
All right.
Take them slow. But can I just make this one point? It's quite important. Universal credit is a big and important reform. It's not an IT reform. IT is only the automation. The important point is it'll be a massive cultural reform. Just give me one example of this, which is why it's so important. Right now, if somebody has to go to work and there's a small mini job out there, they won't take that because the way their benefits are withdrawn, it will mean it's not worth doing. Under where we've got it in the Pathfinders, they'll all tell you the change is dramatic. You can get a job seeker to take a small part-time job immediately while they're looking for work.
Right.
That improves their likelihood of getting longer work, and that means flexibility
right.
for business. So
it's
a big change.
Right.
It's
I'm
worth getting careful.
Because let's just see if that's true. Because universal credit is meant to make work pay. That is your mantra. Let me just show you a quote from the Prime Minister when he was then last Tory conference leader of the opposition. 30 years ago, this party, the Tories, won an election fighting against 98% tax rates on the richest. Today, I want us to show even more anger about the 96% tax rates on the poorest. Right. Yes. That's the situation.
But
under universal credit, the marginal tax rate can still be 76%. It's only come down from 96% to 76%.
No, actually, for lone parents... that would be 76% if they were in the tax bracket. Actually, before they get to the tax bracket, it's well below that. And, of course, governments can change and vary that. That's a decision that a government takes about what's called the withdrawal rate. So you could lower the withdrawal rate or raise
it. You're not choosing to. The fact is that under your reforms, some of the poorest people in this land, if they earn an extra pound... will pay a marginal rate of 76%.
Andrew, some of the poorest people in this land will pay over 100% back in some cases under the present system. The 98% he's talking about is a specific area to do with lone parents. But there are some compound processes inside the present benefit system that mean people are worse off going into work than staying out of work. So they will. This will make a big difference. They will be better off. More importantly, they will be able to identify by how much they're better off without having to have a maths degree to figure it out. Because at the moment, all the benefits are taken away at different rates. Some are gross, some are net.
Sure.
It's complex, it's chaotic. Under universal credit, that won't happen. It'll be simple, and they will always be better off than they are now under universal
credit.
Would
you work that bit harder if the government was going to take away 75 pence of every extra pound you earned?
It's not. It would be higher than that under the present system, much higher.
Yeah, but
in some
it's still
cases,
going to... I know that, but my point is that at the moment you're going to tax poor people at the same rate that the French socialist government taxes billionaires.
Millions will be better off under the system of universal credit, I promise you, and better off that they notice it. And, of course, the point I make to you is that that level of withdrawal then becomes something that governments have to publicly discuss as to whether they lower it or they raise it,
well,
depending on the state of the economy.
I understand that, but George Osborne wouldn't give you the extra money to allow for a less steep taper.
Well,
that's
the
right,
key thing is both the taper and also the participation point. In other words, the moment somebody crosses into work, under the present system, which you haven't talked about yet, there are huge cliff edges to getting into work. In other words, the immediate withdrawal for that makes it worse for them to go into work than otherwise. These have come right down.
But if he had given you more money, you could have tapered it more gently.
The point I make is there are two elements of calculation here. The first is the withdrawal rate on the marginal rate.
He could have. If you had got more money, you could have more.
Of course.
You've got a lot of run-ins.
But of course, Andrew, but a Chancellor can always ultimately make that decision. These are not fixed in concrete. These are decisions that are made by Chancellors, depending, again, like tax rates, how they then judge it. But it'll be much easier under this system for the public to see what that Chancellor, what the government chooses as its priorities. At the moment, nobody has any idea what those rates are and benefits. But in future, it will be. And can I just say, under the Pathfinders, we are finding people are going to work faster, they're doing more job searches, and they're more likely to take work under universal credit in the Pathfinders.
Let's look at the work programme, the effort to try and get the, particularly the long-term unemployed, back to work. Public Accounts Committee said that this programme has been, quote, worse than doing nothing. And this week you had to sack one of the contractors for a poor performance. It's not been a glorious success, has it?
No, they're wrong. It's actually way better than doing nothing. It's
the Public Accounts Committee's wrong.
Yeah, it's wrong. That right now, the work programme is succeeding. More people are going into work. Something in the order of 300,000 people have actually gone into work. 500,000 people have gone back into work as a result of the programme. About 280,000 people are in work, in sustained work, over 6 months. It's over what they call the deadweight line by a long way. Many companies are well above it. And, of course, remember, the whole point about the work programme is that it's set up so that we make the private sector, two things are important, there's competition in every area, so that if poor performers don't perform well, as we've done this last week, we sack them out of the programme, others will move in, so you have a dynamic process that there's constant competition. And the important point here as well is very importantly this, that actually they don't get paid unless they sustain somebody for 6 months of employment. So in the past, under previous programmes of the last government, they wasted millions paying companies who just took that money and didn't do enough to get people into work.
The
work programme gets them into work.
The best performing provider only moved 5% of people off benefit into work. The worst managed just 2%. No. The programme is failing young people and the hardest to help. Long-term unemployment
the NAO report,
rose last year.
Yeah, the NAO report was on the early first months of the work programme. It's a two-year programme, we said assessments. The two-year point now, I can categorically, happily give you the figures for this, they are above the line, the improvement has been dramatic, and the work programme is genuinely working better. It is better than any other back-to-work programme under the last government.
So why is long-term unemployment rising?
And long-term unemployment is falling.
It did in the last figures.
It's
every
falling.
Other category.
It's down. Falling. Long-term unemployment has been falling.
Not
isn't
on
it?
The
down
figures
the
that were
months.
Announced by the ONS.
Youth unemployment has been falling. We have the most largest number of people back in work. There's more women in work than ever been in work before. There are more jobs being created, 1.6 million new jobs being created. The truth is, the work programme is working. Our back-to-work programmes like Work Experience are incredibly successful at a low cost. So we are doing better proportionately than the last government ever did, and it'll continue to improve as we go down, because this process of a marketplace, Andrew, is very important, because that competition is what drives up performance. We want the best performers to actually take the most numbers of people, and that is exactly what's happening as
All
we
right.
shift the market share across to them.
Now, you're a practicing Catholic, the most senior Catholic in the land, Archbishop Vincent Nichols. He's attacked your reforms. He says they're becoming more and more punitive. Punitive. Punitive to the most vulnerable in the land. What do you say?
I don't agree. I don't agree with him on this. It would be good if actually he'd called me before he made these attacks, because most of the facts they put in were incorrect. Disposable income, for example, at the moment is at its highest level it's been for a long time. And for the poorest 10% in society, they're now spending, as a proportion of their income, less than they did before on food, and that's because disposable income has improved. So, you know, the reality is I'm not quite sure what he thinks welfare is about. Welfare is about improving and stabilising people, but most of all making sure that households can achieve what they need through work. Let me give you an example. You know, the number of workless households under previous governments rose consistently. It has fallen for the first time in 30 years by nearly 18%. So it's something in the order of 250,000 children that were growing up in workless households are now in households with work, and they are three times more likely to grow up with work than they are it would have been if they had been in workless households.
Well, let me come on to something that he may have had in mind as being punitive. Let me turn to some of the housing benefit changes. And a year ago, the Prime Minister announced that people with severely disabled children would be exempt from the changes. But that was only after your department fought a High Court battle for a family whose children couldn't share a bedroom because of severe disabilities. Isn't that what the Archbishop means by punitive, or some may describe it, heartless?
No, we actually made that decision. We were originally going to appeal it, and I said no. I think it's reasonable to
make the change. Why did you fight it in the first place?
Well, the standard you put up for an appeal, but I said no.
We were talking about families with disabled children.
Well, there are good reasons for this. I said that for children in difficulty like that, they don't make the decisions about their household, their parents do. So I said we will exempt them. But for adults with disabilities, the courts have upheld all of our positions on this against much of the complaints. So my point about this is, but it's very important.
But you did appeal it, Minister. It's just that you didn't then go, having lost in the appeal court, you didn't then go to the Supreme Court.
Yeah, you know, you make decisions about this. My view is it was the right thing to do to exempt them at that time.
And
these are multiple
decisions.
But no, he didn't at all. I made that decision, not the Prime Minister. The reality is that, let me just get this right, though, the context of this is quite important. Housing benefit under the last government doubled in the last 10 years from 10, 11 billion to 20 billion. It was set to rise to another 25 billion. It's the fastest rising of the benefits. It was out of control. We had to get into control. It's not easy. But we haven't actually cut the overall rise in housing. We've lowered it, but we haven't cut housing benefit. And we tried to do it carefully so that people actually get a fair crack here. And I've got to say, on the spare room subsidy, which is what this complaint was about, the reality here is that there are 250,000 people living in overcrowded accommodation. The last government has left us with 1 million people on a waiting list for housing, and yet there were 500,000 people sitting in houses where they had spare bedrooms they weren't using. Now, you know, as we build more houses, yes, we need more, but the reality is councils and others have got to use their accommodation carefully that they actually improve the lot of those who are living in desperate situations in overcrowded accommodation, and taxpayers are paying a lot of money. Now, so this will actually help people get back to work. They're more likely to go to work, and they're more likely, therefore, to end up in the right sort of housing. And that's important. That reform is
important. We've not got much time left. But a centre-right think tank that you've been associated with on Job Seekers Allowance says that 70,000 job seekers' benefits were withdrawn unfairly. Dominic Penner wants to know, are these reforms, again, too harsh and punitive?
First of all, those figures are not correct. But
the policy exchange is wrong.
Those figures they were using were not actually correct, and we'll be publishing corrected figures on this. But the reality is that what they're referring to...
How many then were?
They're referring to... I've got the figures, they'll come.
So some people have lost their job seeker benefits. They've been forced to go to food banks, and they shouldn't have.
No, they're not. What he actually is referring to is that we allow an advisor to make a decision if somebody is not cooperating. Now, here's the rules around job seekers allowance. We now make them sign a contract. That you sign a contract, you agree these things, these are things we do for you. At the end of it, if you don't do any of those things, then you are likely to have your benefit withdrawn on Job Seekers Allowance.
But now, some of this was unfairly withdrawn.
Well, you know, there are many, many more. There are millions of these things that go through. This is a very small subset.
But if you lose your Job Seeker benefit unfairly, you are your cash flow
but there's an
is
immediate,
shot to hell.
No, but Andrew, there is an immediate review within 7 days. Of that decision within 7 days, that decision is reviewed.
You're on the breadline.
But you know, they're immediately able to get a hardship fund straight away if there is a problem. We have nearly £1 billion set up to help people through crisis loans, hardship funds, support, etc., and in many other ways. We use that finance. We've given 200 plus million to local authorities to do face-to-face checks. You know, this is not a nasty, vicious system. This is a system that says, look, we ask you to do certain things. Taxpayers pay this money. You are out of work, but you have some obligations to seek work. What we simply ask is that you stick to doing those. Those sanctions are there for people who will not cooperate. And I think it's only fair to say to them, look, this is a choice you make. You make choices all through your life. If you choose not to cooperate, then this is what happens.
Is child poverty rising?
No, child poverty is actually falling. It had fallen in the last figures. But
can I show you these figures?
The 300,000 that actually fell in
the
last...
These are from the Institute of Fiscal Studies, which Westminster regards as...
Well, that's a projection by Institute of Fiscal Studies.
But it also shows that it's gone up every year, and it will rise by 400,000 in this parliament under your government, and will continue to rise, projection. But never mind the projection, because you say that's a projection.
It may that's be a projection right, based
wrong.
On if nothing
but
else changes.
But it will be 400,000 up when this parliament ends compared to what you inherited.
Well, that's
child
what their
poverty
projection
is rising.
Well, that's their projection. We'll see where we are.
No, that's not a projection. That's the actual figures.
No, the point
up
is
to,
that
to 2013,
the last figures, but the last figures that have been gained show that child poverty has fallen by some 300,000. Now, the important point is, can I just finish this point off? child poverty is measured against 60% of median income.
Yes.
Okay, so this is an issue about how we measure child poverty as well. Well,
you wanted to change the measure.
Well, we have been discussing publicly with her. No, no, I made the decision not to publish our change figures at this particular point because we've still got a little more work to do on them. But, you know, there is a big consensus that the way we measure child poverty right now does not measure exactly what requires to be done. For example, you know, a family with an individual, a parent who may be drug addicted, who gets what we think is enough money to be just over the line, their children may well be living in poverty, but they won't be measured. So the reality here is we need to get a measurement that looks at poverty in terms of how people live, but not just in terms of the income levels that they have.
You can see from that chart, 400,000 rise in child poverty by the end of this parliament. Why, you'd want to change the definition?
No.
You're presiding over an increase.
I want to change it because under the last government that set it, child poverty rose consistently from 2004, and they ended up chucking, yes, but they ended up chucking huge sums of money into things like tax credits. Let me give you an example. In tax credits, in 6 years before the last election, the last government spent £175 billion chasing the poverty target, and they didn't achieve what they set out to achieve. We don't want to continue down that line where you simply put money into a welfare system to alter a marginal income line, which doesn't make any sense.
I understand.
So that's why we want to change it, not because some projection says you might be going up.
Right. but as I might point out again, it's not a projection up to 13, 14. But I put one final point to you, because again and again you say it's your mission to make work pay, that people will be better off if they work rather than living on welfare. But more people in poverty are now in working families than in workless. For them, work is not paying.
Let me just deal with those figures for a second. Those figures refer to the last government's time in government. What was interesting about it was, up until 2010, under the last government, those in working families, poverty in working families, rose by 500,000, about 1%. Actually, for the 2 years up to the end of those figures, it's been flat under this government. Now, the only point I make about this, first of all, so these are figures at the last government's
door. You inherited and haven't changed.
Yeah, right. Hold on a second. This is important. You know, the truth is, even if you are in poverty in a working family, your children, if they're in workless families, are three times more likely to be out of work and to suffer real hardship. So in other words, moving people up the scale into work and then on into higher hours is important. The problem under the last government system with working tax credits is it locked them into certain hours and they didn't progress. What we're doing now is changing that so that you progress on up, so that you go out of poverty through work and up beyond it. But those figures you're referring to actually refer to the last government's tenure. And there, as I said, they spent £175 billion on a tax credit, which still left people in work, in poverty.
Secretary of State, even 20 minutes isn't enough to go through all this.
There's
a lot more I'd like to talk about.
Yeah.
I hope you'll come back.
And we can definitely come back.
Pick it up. Thank you for joining us this morning on the Sunday Politics.